Hey, if you love the Rewatchables, did you know the entire archive of over 4.5 years of episodes, about 215 in all, are available only on Spotify? You can still get everything from the last 45 days anywhere, but anything after that, available only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by USAA Auto Insurance. Life is full of tough decisions. Thanks to USAA Auto Insurance, picking your auto coverage is not one of them. Make the switch to USAA Auto Insurance and find out how much you could save. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply. This episode is brought to you by Nissan SUV. Everything's better on a bigger screen, right? I mean, I remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark on a big screen and feeling like my life had just changed. People felt that way about Oppenheimer recently. Sometimes you need to see stuff on the big screen. That's why the 2024 Nissan Rogue has Google built right into its 12.3-inch touchscreen infotainment system with Google Maps, Assistant, and more right there. You can really see what's up ahead, and you don't even need to connect your phone. Find your new adventure with a Nissan SUV. Learn more about the Rogue, Pathfinder, and Armada SUVs at NissanUSA.com.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where if you love the new Spider-Man movie, we have a lot of reactions. You can go to the Ringerverse. You can go to The Big Picture with Sean Fennessy. People love that movie, including my kids. So that is where you find the reactions, the Ringerverse podcast and The Big Picture. Coming up next, don't forget to fasten your condom. Father of the Bride is next.
Touchstone Pictures presents Steve Martin, Diane Keaton, Martin Short, and introducing Kimberly Williams.
I'm told that one day I'll look back on all of this with great affection and nostalgia. I hope so.
Good night, Mr. Banks.
Drive carefully. And don't forget to fasten your condom.
Dad!
Seatbelt, I meant seatbelt.
Father of the Bride.
All right, Amanda Dobbins is here. Can't think of a better person to share Father of the Bride with me. My name is Bill Simmons. I watched this with my 16 and a half year old daughter who had never seen it. Even though she thought she had seen it, she'd never seen it. So that was emotional on Saturday night.
Who cried?
Neither of us, but my wife cried because my wife always cries during Father of the Bride.
Okay, sure. There's
only a few movies that have just completely grabbed a piece of turf that's available. There's lots of turf all over the place. And like there's mafia movie turf and buddy cop, whatever you want to say. This is the only My Daughter is Getting Married movie that I think is the default for everybody. I don't even know who's the competition. There is no competition.
There's absolutely none. There's a lot of wedding movie competition. And there is obviously the original with Spencer Tracy and Elizabeth Taylor. But fine, we mentioned the original. We don't have to talk about it again. This is the one for me.
This is the one. This has been the one for 30 years.
Yeah.
This has been the one. Now, you're obviously married to media mogul Zach Baron. But you saw this movie when you're a kid. And at some point, you're probably wondering, if I get married, I wonder what that's going to be like. I wonder how authentic this is. Are my emotions going to mirror the emotions of this movie? Am I going to think of the movie as I'm getting married? So what was that like for you?
So I vividly remember watching this with my father, and I was 7 years old when this movie came out. And this I was allowed to see very early because it is a family-friendly movie. So this is my first Nancy Meyers experience, extremely formative, as we know. Probably one of my first Steve Martin experiences because I'm young. You know, I wasn't like checking out SNL in the 70s. And then I was watching it with my dad, who I... I'm very close to you. In this movie, at one point, Steve Martin talks about how his character is like his daughter and her fiance is like his wife, Diane Keaton. And I'm definitely my father's daughter in that sense. So I remember watching it. I cried. I think I was like 8 or 9. And I think I cried from the growing up and like leaving the family home and like not having the same relationship with your dad that you once did. It's a movie about change in a lot of ways. It's really affecting when Steve Martin realizes, oh, this is going to be different now. And so I think I watched it less as like, oh, I'm going to get married one day, and more as like, oh, like I'm not going to have the same relationship with my dad that I will right now, or I have right now. And yeah, that moment still makes me cry every single time I watch it, including yesterday.
So this movie, I was in college when it came out, and I saw it on a date with somebody I was dating at the time.
Okay.
And you see yourself through the prism of the future son-in-law when you're watching it, when you're in college, when it comes out, right? I'm not thinking about the dad. I don't care about the dad. And then I dated somebody else after that, and this was like her movie with the dad.
Yeah.
So I was watching it even more differently because I was like, all right, if this is like one of their favorite movies, how do I fit into this? Like,
sure.
And you start thinking that. But then once you have a daughter, if you're lucky enough to have a daughter, which I was, now it's a completely different movie. And I've seen it a whole bunch of times because this is one of my wife's favorite movies. If it's on, she's just going to run with it no matter what point of movie it's on. So you have like the little girl part of it, right? Where, and he has the flashback at one point where they're playing, you know, that when she's sitting at the table and it's all of a sudden the little girl. So I saw my daughter in that vein for a while. Seeing it this time and watching it with her was a totally different experience. Thinking like, oh my God, this could be happening to us. Who knows when, but I might be Steve Martin.
You're on the verge of it. I did think a lot about you when I was watching it yesterday, because I knew we were going to have this conversation. But Annie, the daughter in this movie, is very young. She's 22 years old. Well, we'll come back to that.
Oh my God.
I mean,
she's 5.5 years older than my daughter.
There's a lot of strategy there that we can unpack to anyone who's going to have to go through this anytime soon. But yes, it's you're getting close to someone leaving the nest and also possibly someone bringing home romantic partners, and you're going to have to react to it.
That's already happening.
I know.
He says in the opening monologue, and this one hit me a totally different way this time. He goes, you have a little girl, an adorable little girl who looks up to you and adores you in a way you could have never imagined. Totally true, by the way. That's the number one best thing about it. There's this stretch with your daughter where you're like, wow, I'm actually somebody's legitimate hero. I could do no wrong with this person. But this is the best relationship I have. Then they get a little older.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I remember how her little hand used to fit inside mine.
Aww.
Again, 100% true. Then comes the day when she wants to get her ears pierced and wants you to drop her off a block before the movie theater. From that moment on, you're in constant panic. So I'm in that moment now.
Yeah.
That hit me in a totally different way. I was like, oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going through the please drop me off, you know, from the mall. I don't want to be associated. And then I really remember this is the person that I'm bringing home. I got to say right now, my dad behaved better than Steve Martin. My dad had it together.
And Bill,
I believe in you when the time comes. I know that you will keep it together. But I do remember thinking about it. And now it's really interesting. When I rewatched it this time, I was investigating this Steve Martin, Diane Keaton marriage. And I realized that I'm this Steve Martin in my marriage to Zach. And I'm like, I'm definitely the person who will have a meltdown in a grocery store and have to be bailed out from like the local friendly jail. So it's, you know, it's something for every phase of life, this movie.
Well, so my wife and daughter, we were watching it Saturday night, which was the highlight of my Saturday night because it was right before the Patriots lost to the Colts. So this was really, I went from like apex to nadir in 2 hours.
Yeah.
But my wife was laughing because in that scene when she's telling them about how she's getting married and she's like, but he's just like you, except he's brilliant. And it just keeps cutting to Steve Martin. And he's like, wait, what? And my wife was going, this is how you would react when the moment comes. But I think it's so crazy that this is the only movie like this. And now you could say it's actually not the only movie like this because it's a 1950 movie with Elizabeth Taylor and Spencer Tracy.
Right. That's,
and we use the word iconic too much on the rewatchables, but it's an iconic 1950s movie. It really
is. Absolutely. It is.
So when they were remaking this in 1991, it's like still close enough. You know, like think about movies in 1981, 82 now, that would be the 40-year mark where it would be like if they were remaking Blade Runner, we'd be like, all right. That I still remember when Blade Runner happened. So I think people were reacting like that a little bit. But ultimately, it's a Steve Martin movie, and that's why it works.
Yes, exactly. And I know he had been doing some of this like family-friendly dad stuff before Parenthood, etc. But this is the one for me where this is the first one I saw, and he just nails the balance of completely deranged, but also affectionate, and like the physical comedy and all of those reaction shots that are absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And, but still you believe in their connection, and he's so moved in those moments of realization that no one has come close. And you're right that, like, I can't even think of that many father-daughter movies that could compete against it. It's like people don't even try.
Well, you know what's funny? I was thinking the bizarre version of this is Rachel's Getting Married.
Yes.
And the dad in that movie in the kitchen, which we're going to do rewatchables at some point. I don't know if you're in on that, because I think that movie's amazing. And I think Anne Hathaway is amazing in it. But the dad is amazing in that movie. And they're in the kitchen in that one scene when the dad melts down because they find, I forget what they find, but it's so intense the opposite way. But
yeah,
you know, with this movie, it's just like, I have this daughter. She's this special little gem of a person. She's perfect. Whoop, she came back from Italy. She's getting married. And that's, you know, the crux of it, which is how I would react if I hadn't even known my daughter was dating somebody. And now all of a sudden I have to plan a wedding.
It's very gentle. You know that everything's going to be okay throughout the movie, which as soon as you said Rachel getting married, I just tensed up because that just, I was like, oh my God, I remember how uncomfortable I was throughout that. And even when Steve Martin is, you know, going through his stations of the cross of accepting, like, my daughter's getting married, it's sweet. You know, this is like a really very earnest movie where you know everyone's going to love each other in the end, which is really nice in a way. That means that you can explore the other parts of the emotional journey without being like, oh God, like, is this family going to split up? It's, you know, not a divorce movie by any stretch of the imagination. This is like a pretty stable family, but I find it so comforting as a result.
A stable family.
Yeah.
With a really nice house in San Marino, which is one of the most stable places in the country. Zoe's had some games there over the years. And every time we go there, we're like, wow, this place is great. Why don't we live here? It just seems so nice and happy. Sunny.
I drove through the other day and was thinking about doing this podcast. I didn't drive by the house, which is apparently technically in Pasadena. And not are we going to do the whole house thing?
Yeah, we've done it. No, I mean, we drove by the house it still looks like the house. They messed with it a tiny bit, but not too much.
It's so beautiful. Really, really nice place. It's funny how they describe it in the movie as like a small town in Southern California, which San Marino is just like a really nice neighborhood.
It's really
neighborhood
nice.
In suburban LA, but it's still like in suburban LA. It's not like you have to go far to be anywhere else in Los Angeles, except for Bel Air. You do have to, it is a long drive from Bel Air, and I'd like to talk about some of the commutes to the in-laws home.
Great point. Let's talk about Steve Martin for a second.
Okay.
So Steve Martin's been in my life ever since I can remember liking comedy. SNL, which I started watching when they had the half hour shows, I think on like Thursday or Friday nights, they would do the greatest hits re-airs on primetime. And that's how Steve Martin hosted a bunch of those. It's like, who's this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And then The Jerk comes out in 1979, which I saw in the movie theater.
Okay.
A movie that I don't think has held up the way maybe I would have thought even 20 years ago. I think there's some movies from that era, like Airplane, Blues Brothers, some of those where they were just like all-time bangers. And then as the years passed, they've kind of faded. But he became a superstar with that. He also had this comedy album, and he had a couple of them, but that were like massive selling albums.
Mm-hmm.
And he was touring and he was selling out NBA arenas, and him and Richard Pryor were the two most famous comics of the late 70s. So The Jerk seemed like it was going to open up this whole movie career for him. And he made Pennies from Heaven, which I also saw in the theater, which was pretty disappointing. It's weird. It's like an artsy.
I haven't seen that one.
Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, which didn't work and bombed. So now it's like, Steve Martin, a movie star. That's happening. Man with Two Brains, which he makes with Kathleen Turner, coming off of Body Heat, and she's red hot. So that movie's actually pretty good. She's amazing in it. That's like between that and Body Heat, all-time hot performance by an actress where it's just like the sexiness of the actress is actually a trait they're exploiting in the movie. And then he makes Lonely Guy, which is a really, really funny rewatch movie that didn't make it, but I think has this whole cult following. And then finally, All of Me with Lily Tomlin. So that takes us to 85. The movie career has not happened yet.
Yeah.
Then he does this audible from 86 to 92. Three Amigos.
Yes.
Roxanne, which was a real thing. Roxanne was a massive movie in 1987. Plane, Trains, and Automobile are arguably the best Thanksgiving movie ever. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Caper.
Yes. Yes.
You love capers.
I do love capers.
Parenthood. Ron Howard.
There we go.
Flawed but lovable movie that I think everybody has seen multiple times. My Blue Heaven didn't totally work. L.A. Story. He wrote it. A little goofy, but a mood movie. And then Father of the Bride, Grand Canyon. So he makes 9 movies in 7 years as he transitions to being like an adult and a parent. And it's right. A really interesting shift where he's like the wild and crazy guy comedian to now he's like dad.
Yes.
Doesn't happen very often.
And I, like I said, I came to him as dad, as sentimental family guy, you know, and you go back and you see Three Amigos and you see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And so you learn that like, oh, Steve Martin used to like be a little edgier and, you know,
oh, yeah.
And the dry sense of humor still shows up in the family movies and what keeps it from being like totally, you know, schlocky and overly emotional. But it is a little bit like discovering your dad was cool, like in his 20s, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It was the experience I had of being like, oh, Steve Martin, look what else you can do. Because he was so firmly ingrained in my consciousness with Father of the Bride as like, you know, good-natured patriarch of family movies.
He's had one of the great Hollywood careers. And I don't think people would think that. But you go back to like the comedy writing he did with Smothers Brothers. And he's in that whole scene in the 70s when there's only 3 networks and there's just a bunch of amazing comic minds that are just kind of floating around and you don't even necessarily know who all of them are. The comedian stuff he did, he was so good at it that he wrote a great book. He wrote a really good autobiography about why he gave up stand-up comedy. And it was because he was so good and so famous at it that the people were just basically, they were like jukebox. He became a jukebox. He would just come out. They would know all the lines. And he's like, I've taken this as far as it can go. I need to do something else. He's written scripts. He's acted in all kinds of movies. He's written for The New Yorker. He's relevant in 2021. He had a show on Hulu that did well. And that now we're in like the 7th decade of Steve Martin, which is amazing.
You know what else he did that really lived in my consciousness? Oscars host. And so that was like an interesting 2000s. And he's sort of like calling back to the stand-up comedy, but obviously like also like softened for network audience. So he really just kind of exists as like the friendly patter guy to me for almost
a great
a decade.
Point.
Yeah.
Well, it's Oscars host. Great one. Him and Billy Crystal, I think, were probably helped the most by the Oscars.
Yes.
He was a great talk show guest. And he's one of the 3 or 4 most important SNL hosts ever. And that matters because SNL is a pop culture institution. He hosted, I think, one of the 3 or 4 best SNLs of all time in 1978 when they did, he did the King Tut sketch, which was really one of the most famous, like high production pieces they ever did. Medieval Barber was in there. Wild and Crazy Guys was like a phenomenon.
Wild and Crazy Guys, even I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you read the SNL books, like that's why they considered to be the best show ever. But in general, like was always one of the best. He's in the 5-Timers Club when they welcome in Tom Hanks and he's the person who runs it. His best friend is Lorne Michaels.
Right.
So he has the Oscars, he has SNL and he has the talk shows. So he always felt relevant, even if he wasn't relevant from a movie standpoint. You know what I mean? Like he would have these runs where the movies weren't working, but he still felt famous and important.
Yeah. I mean, I do think this movie sort of cements him as like, maybe not America's dad. That's probably Tom Hanks at this point, but like a dad, and it's amazing also that this was 30 years ago.
I know.
And he still has sort of kept that corner of like, I guess, a slightly avuncular, funny, reliable patter guy that you're just always happy to see.
Yeah. And I was going to do this in half-assed internet research, but I'll just do it now.
Okay.
Didn't have any kids when he made this movie.
That is interesting.
He never had a kid.
Neither has Diane Keaton.
Yeah, he never had a child until he was 67. He does have a kid now.
Wow.
But he was America's dad in this movie, but actually wasn't a parent. So that in a weird way, probably approaching it, maybe that's good that he didn't have any dad baggage. You mentioned Nancy Meyers. This was the second of the 4 Meyers-Keaton collaborations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to tell you this. I'm just telling the audience. Baby Boom, Baby Boom, 1987.
Yes.
which was an important Diane Keaton movie because it was the first time she moved away from Annie Hall, Woody Allen, 70s,
yeah.
Kate Corleone. And it's like, can she actually lead a movie herself? And she did.
And I think it's an important Nancy Meyers movie to female heroine, which she then obviously comes back to with It's Complicated and Something's Got to Give. And the intern, there's sort of like the yuppie trilogy that starts with Baby Boom. And Baby Boom has some of the aesthetics, like the Vermont home that Diane Keaton moves to has a beautiful kitchen. But I think Father of the Bride is really where you see the Nancy Meyers formula just like clicking in. The house, the kitchen, the skirt suits, the beautiful, you know, tree-lined streets, the house, the upper middle class, or maybe even just upper class, like calm and like and sense of ease and beauty that allows for these sort of like safe emotions. But it's extremely important for everything that comes after for Nancy Meyers.
Most important, the house.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how many houses she looks at before she picks the house. It's the houses in her movies as important as the two lead characters.
It's certainly the third character and usually probably the first character in almost every single one. I mean, the interesting thing is like this. So they use the exterior of the house in Pasadena, but I do think the interiors are all sets, right?
Yeah. And the backyard, yeah, I think was different too.
A different house. So she's building these homes. She's like, this is her vision. It's so extraordinary. And this is like such like an early 90s, like affluent, you know, like all of the pillows and the hydrangeas everywhere. Yeah. It's so specific, but it's amazing. She could just have a beautiful career designing homes, which is why I think everyone in her movies is an architect. Like Annie is an aspiring, she's an amazing architect at 22. Sure, nobody's an amazing architect at 22, but whatever. And then Steve Martin later on, and It's Complicated, also an architect renovating Meryl Streep's house, specifically right. The kitchen, remember? So yeah, Nancy Meyers has a gift for home renovation, shall we say.
It would be funny if she had a terrible house.
Like, she doesn't. Like I've seen pictures.
She couldn't pull it off for herself just in no. movies. She didn't direct this movie, though. Charles Shire directed
right.
it.
Right. Her ex-husband.
She wrote it, but it's a remake of a 1950 film. So it's technically, she's rewriting it. But I think what this movie did, because $20 million budget made $120 million, what this movie did was it allowed her to do whatever she wanted after this,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
And that's what we see with the films that come next. And she grabs this corner of, I don't even know what the corner was, but it was sitting there for somebody and she took it.
Yes. I think it's probably female. Well, again, her ex-husband, Charles Shire, they were like a husband and wife directing team. They did Baby Boom. They did Father Bride, yeah. Father Bride Part 2. And then they flip and she directs Parent Trap. And I think they wrote it together. And then they divorce and she goes off and does Something's Gotta Give and all these sorts of things. So it's the corner that she eventually develops is like woman of a certain age, just really like figuring out how to thrive in later life in beautiful
incredible,
homes.
Yeah, incredible part for yes. some actress who yes. isn't getting incredible parts anymore.
Exactly.
Not too intense.
Right.
There's no like, I have to shave my head halfway through the movie because I right. have cancer kind of plots. It's,
exactly.
It's just like my divorced husband is a pain in the ass. It's small scale.
Sure.
Small scale conflicts.
But smart, a little neurotic, and always yes. kind of, you can relate to some of the emotion. They're broad enough, whether it's the father-daughter thing or just, you know, wanting to marry Jack Nicholson, despite having Keanu Reeves right there, which, I mean, it's tough. Every day, it's really a toss-up for me.
Parent Trap, mm-hmm. kind of a weirdly important movie.
I think it's a delightful movie. I was also, I think, what, 13, 14 when I saw it, as was Lindsay Lohan at the time.
Well, I think she, yeah. unfortunately, I think everything that's happened to her since has probably hurt that movie a little bit because
yes.
it's kind of tragic to watch now.
It really is.
She's such a good actress in that movie.
She's like one so of the good.
Great, it's one of the great kid actor performances ever.
Playing two roles.
Ever.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. Okay. So we covered Nancy Meyers. We didn't cover Roger Ebert, our guy. Three
okay.
stars.
Yes.
Three stars.
Great.
Kind of was hoping for 3.5, but he did say one of the movies with a lot of smiles and laughter in it and a good feeling all the way through. I completely agree, Raj. You nailed it yet again.
You got it, Roger. I do feel like if you go back to the contemporaneous reviews, they are all under the shadow of the remake. You know, they're just like this Spencer Tracy. And Spencer Tracy is like one of the great Hollywood icons, as you said. But the further you get from both the original and the remake, I just don't feel the remake anxiety that I think some of the critics at the time
did. Not at all. My daughter didn't even know there was a remake. Right. But I think there was an Elizabeth Taylor thing too, because she's another one who, I think of this a lot, like when you think about what's going to happen like 50 years from now when you're dead or like, the reality is you just disappear. And Elizabeth Taylor felt like the biggest star in the world in the 60s. And then when I was growing up in the 70s, it still felt like she was still kind of one of the biggest stars in the world, even though she wasn't doing anymore. And I know all the way through the 80s, she still felt like this enormous deal. So when they're remaking Father of the Bride in 91, there's still an Elizabeth Taylor hangover. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's 40 years and you think like, who are the biggest stars in 1982, 83? If you remade a movie with them, if you remade Risky Business, Tom Cruise would hang over that movie. You just would.
No, it is true. Though it is funny, generationally, you know, I did my research. I learned about Elizabeth Taylor, but, you know, White Diamonds is the first thing I think of when I think of Elizabeth Taylor, which is the perfume commercials that ran through like the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, I had, my generation was just like, this lady keeps getting married. What's going on here? Like she got married 8 times.
She really did.
It was always like the Johnny Carson, blah, 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 Elizabeth Taylor. And she became a punchline for that. All right, we're going to take a break. Lot to cover with the categories. I can't wait.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Say goodbye to overpriced phone bills. You can get a wireless plan from Mint Mobile for just $15 a month. You know what you can do with that extra money that you save on Mint Mobile? Just go get some streaming services and you can watch all the movies that we talk about here in the Rewatchables or just rent them for like $3.99, $4.99. You can basically pay for all your Rewatchables experience just by saving on Mint Mobile for a limited time. Get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month when you sign up for a 3-month plan at mintmobile.com/rewatch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 GB on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Most rewatchable scene, Amanda.
Okay.
The opening monologue I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love looking at the camera and talking as a device to move the plot along. I just want to go on the record as saying, you really have to prove to me that that's going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go into that thinking, this is a mistake. We shouldn't have done this. There is a better way to move the narrative along. It works in this one because the monologue's really good and he's really good in it.
Completely agree on both fronts. Okay. And the monologue also sets up the, you know, the voiceover narration, which is another warning sign for me usually of like, oh, you guys didn't get it together in the script. But obviously there are many famous counterexamples to that. And I think this is one of them.
No, you and I are aligned on that. Yeah. Narration is usually a crutch and you really, like Goodfellas is a good example of like,
right,
narration worked.
Totally worked.
A lot of times they're usually trying to put scotch tape on whatever the plot holes were with the narration.
But this one, because you actually see Steve Martin talking and because he nails the monologue, then the narration, I think, actually adds to the rest of the movie because it allows the George character to say what he can't really say in the moment to the people until the very end.
I agree. From that moment on, you're in constant panic. Couldn't be more true.
That's true.
My daughter getting a driver's license is the monkey wrench in my life I never wanted.
Sure.
I look at Life 360. I wonder where she is constantly. I see the car moving. I'm like, where's it going? It's a nightmare. Just wait. Someday, Amanda. Next rewatchable scene. Annie tells them she's getting married.
Yeah.
So this scene was rewatchable anyway because Steve Martin's so funny in it. It's totally rewatchable in a different way now because nobody gets married at age 22. So now I watch this and like, oh my God, I would have an aneurysm if my daughter came back from a trip and was like, I'm getting married.
Last night while I was falling asleep, I was actually doing the math of everyone's ages in that scene because they start arguing and Steve Martin's like, "You're too young." And Diane Keaton is like, "I was younger when we got married. I was this age when I had her." So I'm like, okay, so now Diane Keaton's like 44 and the mother of the bride, which is very young these days for mother of the bride. She looks fantastic. Diane Keaton just really making the 90s Gap fashion work for her. But yeah. I, everyone here is just, they're jumping into the things. The timeline, it's compressed.
I will say in 1991, it felt early.
Okay. I mean, it is. She's 22.
I graduated college in 92. I went to one wedding that year from a class that was older than mine, where the people dated all through college and they got married a year later. And then one of my roommates got married 2 years after we graduated. So he was like 24. 24 is kind of when it starts. 22 is like somebody might be pregnant if you're getting married at 22.
Right. Well, has she graduated from college yet? Because she's doing the study abroad program and it's not clear to me, like, has she graduated and then is doing an extra study abroad? You don't finish college with a study abroad program. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it seemed like almost like a graduate program, but then they should have said she was 24. I actually think it was a mistake, but I think they're trying to stay faithful to the 1950 movie, which absolutely people got married when they were 22 in 1950. Right. Does not happen as much anymore. Anyway, Steve Martin's unbelievable in that scene. Like, and he's really, really great. His facial expressions are so good in that scene.
I also like the flashback when there's suddenly the 7-year-old with the braids. Like, "Dad, I met a man in Rome and he's a genius and fabulous. We're getting married."
Yeah.
I think about that all the time. That is like a perfect 30-second encapsulation of parents' like complete inability to think of children as like actual adults. It's very useful to understanding your own parents.
I can say firsthand knowledge. I still, in my head, my daughter's like 8 years old and I just can't, I can't get past it.
I think that makes sense. That's reasonable.
Like my wife was telling me they went to dinner and they had wine and my daughter had a glass of wine. I'm like, what? Like,
wow.
And it's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
She can try wine. I want her to like try this stuff. But it's just in my head, she's still 7. One other thing about the getting married scene, which I think is important. I'm not saying this just to cater to you. I swear.
Okay.
I don't need to suck up. We've known each other too long. I don't need to suck up to you. I think Diane Keaton's really good in this scene.
She's great.
As it goes along and as the daughter is laying out the case, this is why I fell in love and this is what happened. And she's so excited and Steve Martin's so horrified. And Diane Keaton's like welling up, like she gets it.
Yeah.
She's locked in and she's like really genuinely happy. And that's like, that can only be a really good actress in that moment. You know what I mean?
Totally. Both of them are actually recreating the timeline of being like, wait, okay, she's telling me something. Wait, is this what I think it is? Oh my gosh, it is what I think it is. And you can see the moment when Diane Keaton's character is like, oh, this is what's happening. And you can see when Steve Martin is like, oh, this is happening in a completely different way. And also the juxtaposition of their two faces. I mean, it's truly funny. They're great actors.
She totally gets it. You could see she's a little suspicious, but happy.
Yeah.
And then as she's hearing the case, she's in. She's like, the daughter sold her in two minutes. And she's like, just genuinely happy. This is my little girl. And Steve Martin is just completely horrified. It's really good. Listen, I think this movie alone made up for Kate Corleone and Godfather 1, in my opinion, for Diane Keaton.
I agree with you.
This made up for
both sides of that.
This made up for her just getting in the limo and leaving all the school kids behind on the street when Michael Corleone was gone for 5 years.
It's also a good performance. We don't have to get into Godfather right now. You know what I feel about her character.
I'll take my Kate Corleone stance to the grave.
I mean, you can hate her or you can hate the person. She just wasn't.
No, I hate the character. I don't hate her in the movie. I hate the character.
I hate her in the movie. It doesn't make sense. She'd be a different actress, but I love Diane Keaton. Miscast.
I'm sorry you didn't hear from me in 5 years. By the way, I married a 16-year-old in Italy and then she blew up. I've been back for a year. Let's get back together.
It makes no sense.
Oh my God. All right.
Wait, can I say just some more things about the dining room scene?
Yeah.
Like all of the writing around it of Steve Martin like going through, I can get tickets to like Paul Simon at the Forum. And then, you know, all right, Paul Simon's an sure, okay. just the details are very funny as well.
And Lakers game, but I don't think Magic's even on the Lakers at that point. It's like these two things that are cool, but not as cool as they might have seemed on paper 10 years ago.
Exactly. Oh, and then, sorry, one more thing. Independent communications consultant is still...
Great stuff.
My in-laws were in town the other week, and they were talking about some cousin who's like starting his own media company. And like, Belle, before I could help myself, it just like slipped out. And I was like, independent, that's code for unemployed. Like to my in-laws about like a very nice cousin of theirs. But it's so good. It just makes me laugh every time.
What do you think his job would be now? If the 2021 version of this movie, what's his job?
I don't think he has to go to Rome anymore. I think he can do everything from like his sad, you know, one room computer.
Right. He's
lair.
Got a studio.
Yeah, exactly.
Like down in the arts district in LA.
Exactly. Right. And so he's not meeting anyone at like.
He's like a computer programmer, probably.
Exactly.
Like he's an independent computer programmer.
I'm sure he's doing well, but he's probably not socializing as much.
Next scene, meeting Brian, the son-in-law.
Yeah. It's so good.
And we'll have the Brian conversation later because I have
some thoughts
on that as well. But
sure. Yes, I do as well.
Just he's kind of perfect.
I think so, too. He's not really a part of the story. The story is about George and Annie and Nina and their family. And so it doesn't really matter who shows up. He kind of should be like an affable zero, you know?
He should be handsome for the pictures, but not handsome in a way that the dad would immediately get threatened and think the guy was a player. He should be like simple and happy, but not seeming like he's got some sinister angle. He's just kind of
like not really a threat, actually. Just like a normal guy named Brian McKenzie, which is just like a very generic, funny name as well.
Right.
That you sort of do forget about.
That scene's good, and he has to. Steve Martin's grilling him a little bit. I like all that. Next one I have is cutting down the wedding list, which is a shorter scene. But if you've ever been married, it's so cutthroat as you're trying to figure out whatever you want to get to your number. The best part is when they're like, "Wait, didn't Harry Kirby die last year?" And Steve Martin's like, "Yes,
yes, he's that's like, great.
Cross him off." That scene absolutely slaughters me. The Bunder fight, which we needed a little melodrama in there, but I actually think Kimberly Williams, and we'll talk about her later too. I think she's really good in that scene.
She is.
Where it's completely ridiculous that she's that upset about it, but she really does sell it. And, you know, it needs that because the dad needs to form some sort of relationship with the son-in-law. And he realizes like, oh, my love for my daughter trumps whether I think this marriage should be happening or not. I've got to help her out. My daughter's in trouble, which is how you should react.
But it does also have like the physical comedy of him like opening the box to like expecting some horror and just like a blender comes out and like Steve Martin just like grappling with his blender is genuinely very funny.
Last one I have is the kid montage basketball scene.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that it is the montage into the basketball scene. It's really like, important. With the Darlene Love song.
You're just playing. That's just for me. That's a lot of the things I care about in one movie.
This is where you and I meet. And it's the same. It's so good. And it's so cheesy. And, you know, even the line at the end of the basketball scene where he's just like, I'm just thinking about how I'll remember this moment for the rest of my life. I didn't cry, Bill, when I said it just now, which we got to count as an achievement for me because it gets me every time.
I got choked up. But I just fought it off.
Okay, that's good.
Because I knew my daughter would make fun of me because she's kind of a cyborg with these movies. I did not put a Franck scene in this. And we could talk about Franck later.
Yeah, I think there's an obvious category for that one.
I have a lot of Franck thoughts. But what's the most rewatchable scene for you? Mine is Annie saying she's getting married.
Yeah, it's got to be that first family dinner scene. Because it sets up all of the dynamics of the movie and everybody's very funny in it.
Okay. What's age the best? Kieran Culkin.
Incredible.
My God.
What a month for Kieran Culkin.
This might be the best What's Age the Best in the history of What's Age the Best.
It's really good.
It is so fucking hilarious to watch this and think that kid's going to be Roman Roy.
It's really, and even at that dinner table scene that we were just talking about, he gets a few reaction shots and his tiny little face is not that different from Roman's face sitting at some of the like succession boardroom tables. It is amazing.
We were, my wife and I were dying and my daughter was getting mad for us because she didn't watch Succession. But it was just like, oh my God, we're just waiting. Like, is there going to be like a, what's the 8-year-old equivalent of a dick pic scene? Like, what do we have? Oh, he plays it very standard, simple, but it's just so funny to think he's going to grow up to be one of the most deranged characters in the history of HBO.
And he's very cute. And they give him a couple like kid scene stealing moments. Good. And he nails them. He's very funny. When
the
he
chauffeur
gels-
thing is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And gelling his hair back for the wedding. Very cute.
More Wood Sage the best. What can I say? I'm a father. Worrying comes with the territory. Bang. Put that on my gravestone. Kimberly Williams.
Yeah.
Just have utter delight in this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought she did a great job. She's really likable. And I actually thought she was going to be a bigger star after this movie. But I think this movie's so distinct. I think it's hard. You can't imagine. What is she going to do next? Like she tried. She was in a couple different things. But it's so hard to disassociate Father of the Bride from her.
Well, she and Steve Martin actually do have father-daughter chemistry in this. Yep. And that's really hard to manufacture. And so a lot of what's happening in it is that you just see them really connecting and it's very moving. And I don't know whether you put her in scenes with other people in, you know, different dramatic scenarios, whether it has the same punch, but they really do work. Even those pickup basketball scenes, very charming, the way they like dance around each other.
Yeah, she's actually pretty believable in those scenes. So she was in, I think like a year and a half later, she was in Indian Summer, which was one of the many terrible Big Show ripoffs.
Right, sure.
It's kind of watchable, terrible. I'm not going to like shit on it too much. It is watchable, but she's in that. And I think that was going to be, is this going to happen or not? Didn't totally happen. And then Father of Bride 2, and then a bunch of TV movies, TV shows. Then she married Brad Paisley.
Right.
And kind of became Mrs. Brad Paisley.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, not a bad thing. He's super famous and she got into it and the whole thing. But there was a moment there where I thought, oh, if there's like a new Brat Pack for the early 90s, she could be in it.
No, she's still defined by it. I remember when she married Brad Paisley, the amount of like Father of the Bride wedding content around their marriage, which, let's be honest, I clicked on a lot of it. Who am I to judge? But she's Annie.
100%. San Marino.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting that in as a Wood Sage the best, especially after having gone to many soccer games there. And it's a wonderful place. I think San Marino is a little like Fight Club. It's like San Diego's like this too, where the people that live there don't tell anybody about it.
Yeah.
It's super nice. They don't want anyone else to know. They just keep it as their secret. Really nice place. Even like one of those places you see the old school hardware stores and
It's very beautiful.
The drug stores that have like ice cream sundaes in them and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's really nice.
I remember Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes went house hunting in San Marino once. You know, it was like covered on the real estate blogs and I was like, where is San Marino? What is this? And you set me straight very quickly. You were like, this is a secretly very nice place. This is where the fancy people go.
I don't know if it's that secret anymore. I feel like the secret's out. I have the basketball scene for Wood Sage the best, only because we've seen this go badly. This is about as well as it's going to go. First of all, dads and daughters don't really play one-on-one like this. You'd play horse. You'd have shooting contests. You wouldn't. No dad wants to play their 5'2" daughter in basketball. You just don't. It's not, there's nothing fun about that. But you would have like a 3-point shooting contest, but they make it work. She's believable. She has some good moves. And I believed it. The worst basketball scene ever in a movie is in Teen Wolf.
Okay.
Boof plays with Teen Wolf's dad. And I don't even know what the game is, but they're both shooting. They're whipping the ball off the backboards. So if that's a 1, this is like an 8.
That's pretty high. I was going to ask you. I'm not an expert like you are. I appreciate the celebration and all of the context that they put around the basketball. Yeah. You know, they're clearly having fun. It also does seem like Steve Martin makes at least one of the trick shots himself.
Oh, yeah. He definitely
does.
Like,
they don't cut away every single time, which I give Steve Martin credit for.
I think he's an unbelievable athlete. I think that's why.
Oh, really?
The physical comedy. That's why.
That's true.
You can't be that good at moving your body unless you're also coordinated. So I would guess like, I have no idea if he's like a good tennis player or a good golfer, but I would just would think he would be.
Makes sense.
You think about like the Parenthood, the famous Little League scene.
Oh yeah.
When his son does something good and he runs it and he has like all that, like you just can't not be a good athlete and pull off a scene like that. A couple more would say it's the best. The overwhelmed dad who can't totally afford the wedding is just a great movie plot. When has that not worked in a movie?
Every single time. But I think this is one of the one of the best ones.
Yeah.
They get all of the, like, as someone who has had a wedding in the last decade, like it's still very accurate to how all of these people operate and how things spin out of control very quickly. And suddenly you need a tulip border and there are swans and people you've never met running around being like,
right,
let me tell you about your blue suit. It's it really holds up.
It sounded like you said 150 ahead. I was about to kill myself and it was 250 ahead. That part's right. Great.
Yeah.
We mentioned the house for what's aged the best. And then Steve Martin said this about the movie. This movie represents the complete death of the hippie laurel wreath standing on the mountaintop marriage. Although it's been dead a long time, this is the first movie to see it. I thought that was interesting. So it's like this end of the baby boomer generation.
Yes. Yeah.
Their kids getting married. It kind of plants the flag on that. And then I think it scared everyone else off because it did it so well.
Yes. Can I add one more?
Yeah. Add as many as you want.
The hot dog bun scene.
Oh, which, yeah.
Okay, but this as a problem in America persists. And I have a meltdown every single time it happens to me. The other week, we tried to order curtains for a room in our house, Bill. And so you need the curtain and you need the curtain rod. And then you need like the ring that attaches the curtain, right? And the curtains had like 7 holes. And the rings are only sold in packs of 9. And then suddenly I'm just like doing math. And 7 and 9 are like really hard to multiply as well. You know, they don't match up. And I've got the calculator out. And all I could think about was the hot dog bun scene in Father of the Bride. We have identified this fraud that is being perpetrated on us. It's been 30 years. No one's fixed it. Please help us.
I told my daughter is really stressed out about math. She's not that good at it. It's her one weak spot. And I was like, look, when you get older, the only two things you're going to have to worry about are adding up a tip at a restaurant and when you have to figure out fractions for hot dog buns and hot dogs. That's really it. Those are the two things you need math for. Other than that, you'll be fine. Other people will do the math for you.
It's totally true. But it drives me insane every time. We haven't solved this.
It's amazing. 30 years, haven't solved it yet. All right, we're going to take another break and then we're going to do What's Age the Worst, which is a surprisingly long list for me.
This episode is brought to you by Nissan SUV. Everything's better on a bigger screen, right? I mean, I remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark on a big screen and feeling like my life had just changed. People felt that way about Oppenheimer recently. Sometimes you need to see stuff on the big screen. That's why the 2024 Nissan Rogue has Google built right into its 12.3-inch touchscreen infotainment system with Google Maps Assistant and more right there. You can really see what's up ahead, and you don't even need to connect your phone. Find your new adventure with a Nissan SUV. Learn more about the Rogue, Pathfinder, and Armada SUVs at NissanUSA.com.
All right, what's age the worst? We mentioned it, but let's hit it. Again, 22, getting married at 22.
Yeah.
Even in 1991 felt really abrupt. And I don't know why they played it that way. We discussed it, whatever. Where do you stand on Father of the Bride 2? Do you wish it exists? Would you rather it didn't exist?
I'm okay with Father of the Bride 2. Because I mean, it's obviously more far-fetched, but you know, Bill, pregnancy and all that stuff, pretty weird. So it's like they do manage in the same way that Father of the Bride comments on weddings and that thing very smartly, I think. Father of the Bride 2 is sort of funny for that. But I agree that maybe it would be better if everyone just lived happily ever after in a vacuum.
Where does it stand in the money grab rankings for you?
It's not the most offensive. Maybe I like it more than most people.
Oh,
I do like this family.
Well, $30 million budget for that one made $76.6 million.
Okay. So maybe not the most effective money grab.
Yeah, it's I'd like bringing Franck back, but his accent wasn't as strong the second right. time. I don't know. I had some issues. Maybe Father of the Bride 2 is better if Kieran Culkin really is leaning into Roman Roy.
Sure. Like yes, exactly.
Like a 13-year-old. It's really yeah. going off the rails. More would say it's the worst. The virtual Netflix sequel, I think, was one of the low points of the pandemic.
I would agree with you. You know,
I don't blame them for doing it. We're all in a weird place.
Exactly.
We're trying to figure out what entertainment is when none of us can leave our houses. But when you look back at that, that's how low our standards were. And that's how bad of a headspace we all were in a country where it was like, hey, this is a good idea. Let's do a Zoom table read. Nobody wanted to be on Zoom more.
I agree. And like watching it now takes you back to that particular moment in time, which I yeah. just don't ever yeah. want to revisit.
Who wants to go back to April 2020, whatever
Not
that
was. Not me. Yeah.
The parking situation at the wedding is the what stage the worst, just because okay. nobody would drive to a wedding now for a couple of reasons. One, you would take Uber. Two, way more drunk driving awareness, probably mm-hmm. starting in the 2000s. But in 1991, you would have driven to a wedding and been like, I hope I don't get stopped on the way home, was kind of weirdly the mindset back then. There's 100 cars for, there are way too many cars too. Everything yeah, about the parking feels
and
weird.
And then the cops are able to drive up to the driveway, which I'm like, logistically, this doesn't make sense. Like how right. did the car, yeah, I agree with you.
And then having little kids driving the cars.
Sure, right. But that's funny. So
it's
you know.
It's funny, but that's not...
it wouldn't
even like
now.
A 14-year-old would be rough.
Right.
Diane Keaton's clothes, some winners. There's a couple where it's like, what's going on here? You're wearing khaki pants and it's all over the map.
It's so of a moment though, and also yep. is really coming back because, you know, everything old
so my
is
wife
new
said.
Again. Yeah. It's very hard to pull off that like high-waisted khaki with the denim shirt like tucked in
yeah.
and the hair of that length. Most people, it's just not working for them and she makes it work. So okay. I think it's era and context appropriate.
So age the worst, but now aging the best because it's kind of coming back.
Yes.
A little bit.
Exactly.
Okay. Another what's age the worst, bear with me.
Uh-huh.
Slight stunt casting with Diane Keaton as the mom in this movie at the time that now nobody would think was stunt casting. But in the moment, it was kind of one of the hooks of the movie. It's like, yeah, Diane Keaton's the mom and Father of the Bride. It's like, wow, Diane Keaton's going to be the mom of somebody who's going to get married? It seemed, it was like, whoa, right. that might be a stretch. And then it wasn't. But now you wouldn't think that.
Right. And I guess also I don't want to say a thankless role because we both agree she's really good in it, but she's not the star of the movie.
It's a thankless role.
Yeah.
That she makes really good.
That we are giving her thanks for.
You could have put a much worse actress in that role mm-hmm. and that part disappears basically.
That's true.
But it is a movie about the dad and the daughter. So it's right. hard for, she's got to get, you know, you got to run some plays with her, get some shots for her and they do it. And she's, yeah. I think she maximizes whatever the potential was. Last, what's age the worst for me? I just don't love the falling in the pool scene. I think it's super hacky and gimmicky. It's adorable.
Right.
I get it. We needed some levity. We needed, but I just, it's too unrealistic. The rest of the movie is like at least realistic. Anything that happens, that scene is like, this would never happen. Come on.
The when he's going through the medicine cabinet and then that the mirror
realistic.
Falls off the window, that's funny. That is yeah. realistic. And
even
that makes
like
me
going
laugh.
In the desk and like kind of thumbing through stuff, realistic. Right. But and, then it and, gets silly.
And I laugh at the dogs part because those dogs are very scary. And I'm a person like when they're aggressive dogs, I don't really know what to do. So I often always think like, release,
right.
you know? So it's like stayed with me. I guess it's helped me negotiate difficult dogs in my own life. But yeah. it goes on for a while.
Yeah. I get why they did it. I think it's on the silly scale, ramps up a tiny bit too much. Any more what's age the worst for you?
Well, when do you want to talk about Martin Short?
Let's do it now.
Well, because I would say specifically like the accent gag just is not a type of comedy we do anymore of like, oh, what? I can't understand you. And, you know, making jokes about like, you know, it's not broken English in this case, but just this whole like very running gag of being like, you don't speak how I speak. We just, that's not comedy in 2021. And we talk, I know you guys talk about it all the time on Rewatchables that a lot of comedy doesn't age well, but this is one where it's kind of the whole character.
Yeah, it's funny. I wasn't even going to go 2021 with it. I was thinking more like it's a one note gag.
Yeah.
You sit the first time you see the movie, it works. But the eighth time, you're just like, all right, get this guy out of here. I get it. He's got it. Nobody can understand his accent. Like, it's
right.
I actually think B.D. Wong is funnier than him.
Yes.
But I just, it's hard to believe this 30 years ago, this was like a phenomenon.
Like totally.
Martin Short as this character was like, oh my God, this is one of the funny, is he going to get nominated for an Oscar? Like, people thought this was hilarious. Now right. It's like, eh.
And you bring up that he is like brought back for Father of the Bride Part 2 and arguably like plays a larger role. Though the scene where he's leading them both in the workouts is still to me pretty funny in Father of the Bride Part 2. But yeah, it's just, it's one note, as you said.
So my daughter, who's pretty, she's of this generation where they're going to judge all this stuff.
Yeah.
She was more like, that guy's annoying.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I get it. Nobody can understand him. Like, he's in the movie, I don't know for how many minutes, but it's like 3 minutes too long with the same joke.
Yes, exactly.
And probably my least favorite part of the movie. All right, casting what ifs. Steve Martin cast before they wrote the screenplay.
Huh.
They locked him in. They knew it was a remake. Can we get Steve Martin? Yes. And then they wrote it, Nancy Myers and Charles Schoen. So the rarely seen casting... anti what if they knew the movie was built around him. This was a stunning one to me. Phoebe Cates offered the role of Annie Banks, had to turn it down because she was pregnant.
Wow. Though, I mean, that could have worked in the movie, as you said, like, why are people getting married at 22, even in 1991? But I guess that would make it a little more scandalous than they wanted.
Yeah, but she would have
been
like 29. And,
yeah.
Yeah. But Phoebe Cates, who my generation completely loves and is all in on, but never had like great follow-up role and then just got married to Kevin Kline and started having kids.
Okay.
But there's this alternate universe career for her that I think...
Yeah.
I got to say, her versus Demi Moore, it's like pretty... If she had just said, I'm fighting for every Demi Moore part with Demi Moore, I think she gets half of them.
Then that's also an interesting... what if for Demi Moore, but that's a whole other, yeah.
Diane Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
These are her words. Disney Studios, Jeffrey Katzenberg at the time, didn't ever want to work with me. Charles Shire and Nancy Myers, who'd worked with me before, had to beg to get me into Father of the Bride. Just before Father of the Bride, I'd done a movie called The Good Mother, which was a big failure, like big failure. And that was it. That was a Disney movie. So when Charles and Nancy wanted me for Father of the Bride, Disney didn't want anything to do with me. Now, I don't even remember The Good Mother, do you?
No.
I looked it up. I don't even remember it coming out.
No idea
but
apparently
Jeffrey Katzenberg was like, nope, she's out.
Well, Disney.
So there you go.
You got lucky that Diane Keaton did it anyway.
Great job, Disney. It all worked out. Best That Guy, aka the Joey Pants Award. B.D. Wong's won this before. I think he wins it again. Does everyone know that's B.D. Wong, or is it just like me, you, and Fantasy and Chris Ryan? Is B.D. Wong, people know that's him, or do they know him as that guy from this? I think they know him as that guy. I don't think he's B.D. Wong.
If they know him, well, I know him from this, so it's hard for me to, and everywhere else, he's like B.D. Wong from Father of the Bride. So maybe he has some sort of awareness. But no.
Well, the other nominee is the guy who plays the son-in-law, whose name I didn't know until I looked it up when I was researching this movie. So that would be the other candidate.
Does he do anything else? Can you be a that guy just for one movie? The movie in question?
Au contraire. His name is George Newbern.
Okay.
His IMDb, he's been in like 200 things.
Okay. But have you seen them? Have I seen them?
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of shows, just like he hasn't had starring roles. He was in 2001, he was in one of the comic book movies.
Sure. Weren't we all?
But here's the crazy George Newbern stat.
Okay.
One of the highly prolific, respected audiobook narrators in the world.
Really?
As of September 2020, over 350 credits on Audible.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, he's like one of the guys for audiobooks.
Wow,
that, by the way, that's
him.
Lucrative. Yeah, great also, job by George.
Now that I'm looking at, I forgot that he had a long run on Scandal.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which I did watch.
In Providence. He was in Providence for a while.
But,
so
like he's aged and he looks so different that I almost don't think of him as the guy from Father of the Bride when he's on Scandal. So,
all right, so we'll give it to George Newbern. I think BD Wong has graduated from Joey Pants.
Yeah, the Audible stat is interesting. Good for him.
Vincent Hannon, Give Me All You Got award for best overacting. Martin Short, I mean, Jesus.
Sure. But is it even like best overacting? It's just most overacting.
Most overacting.
Okay, great. I agree.
Dionne Waiters award.
Mm-hmm.
For best heat check.
Okay.
I'm not giving it to Martin Short.
No.
Because I think both of us are kind of annoyed by that performance. Eugene Levy's in one scene. He's fine. I really like BD Wong. I think he's really funny in this movie. I love his facial expressions, and I think he really adds something.
So Diane Keaton has too much to work with
too many,
to be eligible?
Yeah, too many lines.
Okay,
she's the second biggest star in the movie.
I know, but as we said, it's like a thankless role.
No, she's in the whole movie.
All right, okay, well,
not eligible.
I just want to say that Diane Keaton's great. And also Kieran Culkin's not eligible.
Could be eligible. I guess if you're watching him under the Roman Roy prism, maybe he's...
Yeah.
And maybe he's more fun.
He gets a few moments, you know, and there's that like really beautiful, lovely scene, like when he's practicing right before the wedding and, you know, then he and Annie say goodnight to each other and it's like, I love you, Dad. I love, you know, and
Steve
Martin.
All right, I like it.
Okay.
We'll give it to Kieran Culkin. Recasting couch.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite recasting couches I've had. I can't wait for your reaction.
Wow. Okay.
As the son-in-law. I'm mm-hmm. taking you back to 1991. Think of mm-hmm. it in the 1991 mm-hmm. context.
Mm-hmm.
George Clooney.
But that, Bill, that changes everything. Even 91 Clooney has so much charisma. He's just pulling the focus. So I like it. But then you're making, it's not a movie about Steve.
I'm reinventing the movie is what I'm doing. I'm thinking mullet, Facts of Life, George Clooney, where it's like he's still boyish. I don't feel like he's going to steal anybody's wife or girlfriend. He's charming. You could see how he could have met this woman in Italy and stolen her away.
Right.
And now as you're watching this years later, it's like, oh my, I can't believe George Clooney was the son-in-law. It just would have been a fun wrinkle.
I mean, it is a fun wrinkle, but he like, you know, when Steve Martin's like, do we know that this guy is, how old is this guy? Has anyone run a background check? Yada, yada. You can see him being slightly more of a threat, even Facts of Life.
Good point.
Clooney.
All right. I tried. Half-assed internet research. Only have a couple because I mentioned some of them. There's some guy named Tom Irish who made his film debut in The Father of the Bride in 1950 and his last film appearance in this movie. And he played the same character in both, Ben Banks.
That's,
so popped up.
That's very cute.
Spencer Tracy, nominated for Best Actor.
Mm-hmm.
In 1950, for the original Father of the Bride, lost to Jose Ferrar for Cyrano de Bergerac. Martin Short portrayed the wedding planner. The portrayal is based on somebody named Kevin Lee, who makes regular appearances on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh.
And assisted with Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston's weddings. What are your favorites?
I'll bet he did.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about this as a wedding movie in nitpicks. I think this is most like a great wedding movie. And also I've got some notes.
Can't wait. The house with the actual inside house sold for $1.998 million in August 2016. This is where the wedding reception and the backyard stuff was filmed.
Okay. So like all the basketball.
The exteriors were filmed at the Pasadena house that I've driven by.
Mm-hmm.
The people paid $950 for the house in 1999. It's now worth way more than that. But they get people come by all the time, take pictures.
I'm sure
of it. It's like the Michael Myers house and a bunch of other ones.
Yeah.
That's all I got for that. Apex Mountain. Steve Martin, you can make the case maybe. Like at this point, I still think it's probably 1978. Or 1979 range when he's got The Jerk out. He's the biggest comic in the world. He's on SNL. That's the most famous. So I would say that you could make a case for second career Steve Martin right around here.
Like mainstream Steve Martin?
Mainstream Steve Martin.
Starts here?
Yes.
Because I don't think he like hosts the Oscars or does any of his sort of just kind of America's Dad stuff without this movie.
Yeah. Mainstream Steve Martin, this is okay. Apex Mountain.
Okay.
Diane Keaton, no. But no. Mainstream Diane Keaton, still no. But that's probably in the mid-90s, right? That's 95 range.
Well, I would say it's Something's Gotta Give, which is her like full Nancy Meyers movie that she stars in. And I think that's like 2003.
Yeah.
I think that's
But Diane Keaton's Apex Mountain is Annie Hall. So what's interesting is they both have their yeah. Apex Mountain.
Right.
Like 14 years before this movie. Kimberly Williams, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Father-daughter movies, undeniably, yes.
Yes.
Nancy Meyers, no. San Marino, 100% yes.
Mm-hmm.
Dads. Probably not, but I'd throw it out there. Wedding movies?
It might be for me. I
think so too. Even though we have nitpicks, I still think it's the wedding movie apex. It's a whole movie built around a wedding that's ultimately like a happy movie and not Rachel's getting married where it's just complete dysfunction and people fucking in the basement.
Right. And it's like all of your other favorite wedding movies or movies that, or, you know, except for like The Godfather. I don't count The Godfather as a wedding movie, even though the wedding is important. But they all come after Father of the Bride. This like really starts the 90s explosion of everything from Four Weddings and a Funeral to Wedding Planner and Wedding Singer and you name it. People are like, oh yeah, weddings. Great setting for a movie.
Right. I'm with you. That's all I have for Apex Mountain.
Okay.
One more break and then we're going to pick some nits.
This episode is brought to you by USAA Insurance. When you're a homeowner in the military community, peace of mind is priority. And USAA Homeowners Insurance has the award-winning service to give you just that. If you have to file a claim, the process is transparent and easy. You can do it all right in the USAA app. And replacement cost coverage comes standard. That means damaged items are repaired or replaced, even if they cost more today than they did when you bought them. Which could put your wallet at ease too, by the way. Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/homeowners to learn more and get a quote. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Sonic. If you don't know already, we have a total solar eclipse coming. And to celebrate this remarkable event, Sonic created a frozen drink inspired by the eclipse, a Sonic Blackout Slush Float. It's a total sensory experience with blackout slush topped with a creamy soft serve and galaxy sprinkles. It's an out of this world treat, perfect for the big day. Get the Blackout Slush Float at Sonic before it eclipses. Limited time only at participating Sonic drive-ins. All right, picking nits. I so many issues with the wedding itself. There's no father-daughter dance.
I mean, just the father would be present at the wedding, especially a wedding this organized. Like he would be there taking photos. Like he would have to, they would need to make sure there's someone who's in charge of running the wedding who would insist that he be there before they cut the cake or they do all the sorts of things just for the photos alone. He's like part of the run of show. I agree with
also,
you.
Also, I was going to weddings in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The father-daughter dance was happening at those weddings. A lot of the stuff that we have now at weddings was happening in the late 80s, early 90s, including all the freaking songs you hear. A lot of the playlist just hasn't changed. They've added new ones, but a lot of the old ones from the 70s are still there. The best man speech, the maid of honor speech, I got to say that was probably added like mid 90s. I felt like that became more of a thing as around mid 90s. The parent, usually the dad of the bride giving a brief toast, that is now morphed into everybody gives a speech at the wedding.
It's true. We got to cut back on that, everybody.
Yeah.
Just a note.
Their speech police needs to maybe step in. But the father-daughter dance, the first dance between the bride and groom and the father-daughter and dance were fucking staples since whenever we had weddings. I don't know how they don't have it in this. They never have a dance. And then Brian and Annie's first dance is with everybody's on the dance floor already. They don't have
That's
their
true.
Moment. I thought they, for all the money they paid for a wedding planner, where are the special dances?
Well, this is another thing where in the scene you really like where they're going through the wedding invitations and trying to cut down the wedding list. So the wedding planner is getting an invitation to the wedding and Steve Martin is outraged about this. And everyone else in his family is like, of course we have to invite him. You know, he planned the wedding.
Yeah.
I was Steve Martin. No, you don't have to invite him. He's working at the wedding. Like, he's right. in charge. He doesn't need an invitation. That's his work day. What are we doing?
Also, the invitation responses never come back all in a row. Half the time the people forget to respond and you have to call them and check and make sure they're actually coming or not.
Okay, let's talk about this list for a second. The initial list is like 500 people.
I don't know. I've never been to a wedding with 500 plus people. That's insane. You're inviting cousins of cousins at that point.
I don't know 500 people.
Yeah, like, that was ridiculous.
That was absolutely ridiculous. And then when Steve Martin once again is, you know, setting limits and he's like, we are only inviting 150 people to this wedding and everyone else treats him like a monster. I'm like, 150 yeah. people is
that's a lot.
It's a sizable wedding.
Yeah. That's, mine was 128 and we left some people on the cutting room floor and there was blood.
Mine was 150 because my in-laws, who actually my husband planned the whole wedding, so I shouldn't. They were wonderful, but their list was like, you know, and we have 9 relatives from Denmark who also have to come in, et cetera, like a lot of people. And it was still only 150 people. It was a large wedding.
It's a tradition to fly people from Copenhagen to your wedding. What about that one? That is.
And that the bride's family is supposed to pay for 9 international tickets from Denmark. I did not know about that. That
ludicrous.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
So she's in Italy for 3 months, falling in love with Brian.
Yeah.
I know we didn't have email back then. We didn't have texting.
Right.
Pretty sure we had telephones.
Sure. Yeah.
Seems pretty close with their parents, especially her mom. Seems like the mom-daughter have an awesome relationship. At no point it's like, hey, I met somebody. That's not a conversation she has with her mom ever.
Did you have phone cards in 1991?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is what I remember, like, you know, from my study abroad phase was like you went and you got the phone card. It like did sort of have email, but you were saving to make sure that you would call in once a week. I completely agree with this. Also, when they go visit the in-laws.
What are they? They don't hear from her for 2 months. You assume she's dead. Like what? Right. I mean, of course, she's going to check in once a week.
Right. And it's like they know when her flight takes off and lands, you know, they know when she's coming home. So they have some information about her. But also, so the in-laws do go to Rome and they talk about how they got to meet Annie and spend a few days with her. So the in-laws knew. I don't know whether this was like kid of divorce sense tingling, but I was like, in real life, if you didn't tell your parents about your fiance, but your in-laws had actually gotten the information several months ahead and like had a lot more access, there would be
furious.
Major, furious, yeah. Like huge family fight.
Furious.
Yeah.
I also think because the dad, the husband's family was obviously much wealthier than Steve Martin's family. Mm-hmm. I think that family offers to chip in.
Oh, totally.
And at least for the Copenhagen flights, they're not just sitting back and letting Steve Martin plan anything. If anything, they're trying to flaunt their wealth a little bit and be like, let us pay for this, let us pay for that. Also, where was the rehearsal dinner?
This is a great point.
No they rehearsal just, dinner? Everybody just meets on that Saturday?
Totally skipped it. I have no idea. And also,
because that's what the groom's family pays for the rehearsal dinner in most cases. So they would have had this fancy one at the Bel Air Country Club. That's a whole like 10-minute scene we could have had that they just don't have.
It would have
come
been
on,
very
Nancy
good.
Myers. Nancy Myers, get your shit together.
There is that scene in the kitchen, like after Steve Martin imagines the whole wedding at the steak pit, which is wonderful. Honestly, it looks like a great wedding. When Diane Keaton is like the in-laws did offer to pay, and Steve Martin, you know, takes umbrage at that and is like, we can afford to pay for everything, which is another like sort of nitpick in this movie where the Bel Air relatives are supposed to be like extremely unfathomably wealthy. And Steve Martin and Diane Keaton are just like average people. These people have a beautiful $1 million home in San Marino and they're doing well themselves.
They have a fucking awesome backyard. They're not middle class. Yeah.
Yeah, that exactly. Is hard to get like a backyard. These people like that are also thriving, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No rehearsal dinner was just super annoying. Mm-hmm. No Sunday breakfast after? Like what? This only happens in movies where people get married and then they immediately have to go on a plane to wherever the honeymoon is. Who does it? I've never been to a wedding in my life where the people left that night to go on their honeymoon. It's never happened ever.
I mean, even if you're just thinking about timing wise, what? They leave at 9 o'clock? That's probably the earliest you could leave to catch a red eye from LA to Hawaii.
Just wait a day. Go the next day.
But like the flights to Hawaii aren't leaving at 9 o'clock. You get red eyes on the way home from Hawaii, flying back to LA. But there's no, I agree with you. I will say though, I mean, you're 100% right.
By the way, my best friend's wedding does it too. They're like, we got to get out. We got our honeymoon to go to. It's like, you're fucking rich. You're going to fly on a private jet to wherever you're going.
This is 100% not how it works in real life. I agree with you. But it does end the movie well. You know, it's like, I appreciate it's a quick ending. They're getting out of the movie. It's not an extended, you know, 20-minute sequence with everyone hugging. It's to the point. So I appreciate it.
I have a thought on that, but I'm going to hold it for the probably unanswerable questions.
Okay.
More picky nits. There's a 14-year age difference between Kimberly Williams and Kieran Culkin.
Again, this is some of the math that I did last night. So if Diane Keaton was 22 when she had Kimberly Williams, then you add 14, 36, totally viable. And they do even say that...
I've never seen in my life an age... Unless it's an adoption, I've never seen an age difference like that just with two naturally born kids. That's insane.
Well, I mean, you have, but like usually there are kids in the middle. You know?
Yeah.
And then there's like once they, and so it's a family that wanted to have like three kids and suddenly they have five because, you know, surprise later in life. But he does sort of acknowledge it in they try to play it soft, but they do acknowledge in the voiceover. It's like Maddie showed up a surprise a few years later. So I guess they just.
A few years later.
I know. It's like 14
years later. Annie was like 13.
Yeah.
It snows in LA in this movie, which is
okay.
Now you can make a case. All right, we're near the mountains in Pasadena. I get it, but it's not just a light sprinkling. There's like actual snow that they have to shovel. It's
like 2 inches of snow. Yeah,
and he sells it. He's like, oh, this hasn't happened in 36 years. It's like, okay, cool, but this would never happen.
Also, that the wedding isn't canceled immediately because of the snow. Because whenever it even rains in Los Angeles. People are like, oh, sorry, can't leave my house. Got to get, you know, out all the canned goods supplies. I have no idea how to drive or do anything in the rain at all. So snow,
how about this? Wait, but how about this? Snow melts. The backyard's a fucking mess.
Right.
The front yard is like a mud pit. And now they're parking 200 cars in there. That's going to be like a slip and slide trying to get out of there. How many people got hurt?
They yada yada the whole thing. Though I do like the one BD Wong line that's like, just all I can say is thank God snow is white. You know, it just works, which it does match. They at least acknowledge that the snow would impede some of the plans, but at least matches the decorations. But no, it's insane.
Snow is gone by the nighttime.
Yeah.
It doesn't freeze in the ice.
But
nothing.
It's
just
melting
perfect
beautifully.
Again.
That one shot of the church itself outside is you can definitely see all the fake snow that they've put in like beautiful little patches here and there. It just looks like a Rockwell painting, but it would not look like that in real life.
I have a slight nitpick on would they end up with 200 people? 150?
I mean, 200 from a list of 500 is
just cramming them in that house.
Editing
200 people in that house is you're really going to be crammed. How many bathrooms? You got 4 bathrooms at that point,
right?
You still have to have waiters and stuff walking around. Like that house needs to be pretty big to accommodate those people. I was thinking about that when I was watching. I was like, what kind of house is this?
The tent is pretty sizable. They do a nice job with the tent. I'd just like to say it is a pretty tasteful wedding. That's something I should have put in like what's aged the best. It's like you can see it being like really tacky, like late 80s wedding, but no, it looks nice. But I don't know whether the tent is really accommodating 200 people.
Could this be remade as a 10 episode Netflix show? Please no.
Okay, but wouldn't you watch it?
I would, but I just know it'll be bad.
No, I mean, it'll be bad.
You would watch it. Wow, look at you. You have a gleam in your eye.
But Bill, I'm watching every Thursday morning. I'm like, oh my God, there's a new Sex and the City remake episode to watch, you know, even though it's like it's not really working. And it is in many ways betraying the sanctity of the original. But I would watch it. The thing is that they would have to like remake it circa 1990 with Steve Martin. I'm just imagining this is also sort of why, even though Father Bride Part 2 is not good, I'm like, sure, I didn't mind it because I like spending time with these people. So they would need to remake it with these, like in this world.
So you would have to be there. They'd be the grandparents.
Yeah.
Kimberly Williams and George Newbern would be the parents.
Yeah.
And then we'd have new people in their 20s. The movie's built around them. And Steve Martin and Diane Keaton are the wise old grandparents.
Yes.
I actually, if that was a 10 episode,
and,
all right, I'm talked into
and
it.
Then
fine.
Kieran
you
Culkin's
broke me.
The Roman screw up, you know? Like
oh
the,
my God.
And like
wow,
the weird
you really
uncle?
Talked me into this now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, you can't do it on Zoom. It can't be Father of the Bride Part 3. We got to have the budget. We got to have all the characters. We got to think through this. But I'd watch it.
I can't believe it took you less than 90 seconds to
know,
break me on that.
Of course you can.
Unbelievable.
You love this movie, so you'd want to spend more time with it.
So probably unanswerable questions. How much did the wedding cost? They said it was like $250,000. BeFrugal.com broke it down. The venue is free. Annie's dress cost $68,000. They say that.
$68,000?
That's what they said.
Hold on. That's crazy. In 1991?
They have it as 572 guests at $250 per head, $143,000 on food. We know that it wasn't 572, so maybe this is lower. Bridesmaid dresses, another 10. Copenhagen flights, 10. Mm-hmm. Wedding planner, probably 20. I think we're somewhere over the 200 mark if you add everything up, right? I think Brie Frugal did a bad job.
Probably. I mean, I did multiply 150 times 250 yesterday. I got out my calculator. And
what is
that
40 grand?
I think it was $25,000. But that's just, you know, for food and guests. The church is not free, but the house is free. But the tent is not free. They're rewiring, you know, electricity. They got to bring in all of the rentals.
Tables. So maybe 150?
Yeah. I mean, but 150 in 1991 is an insane amount of money for a wedding. The prices have changed, right? I think it's probably got to be like a $50,000, $60,000 wedding because when BD Wong calls with the estimate, the 250 ahead includes everything from the catering to the tent to the, you know, what have you. So the $250,000 seems like
that seems too high.
Yeah, that's too high.
So we'll say somewhere between like 60,000 and 90,000.
Okay, that
would be
sounds
our verdict
good.
For 1991 prices,
which is a tremendous amount of money for a wedding at any point, but certainly in 1991, and certainly for a wedding at home, where you're not even paying for the venue.
Okay. My next unanswerable question, because I knew you would answer yes for should this be remade into a show?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Would you call it Father of the Bride 3 or Grandfather of the Bride?
Grandfather of the Bride.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next question, unanswerable. Is this the best Steve Martin movie ever? I think I'm probably more qualified than you to watch.
You are.
I've been there the whole time.
You are.
But you've also seen almost all the movies.
Yes. But it's my sentimental favorite for sure. And it's such a sentimental favorite that it's hard for me to detach from it. I mean, what would even be in the running for you?
This is it. I think this is the answer. I think The Jerk would have been there for a while, but I just don't think it's gotten the legs. The other one, Roxanne, was a massive movie.
Okay.
And was a movie that people were not, were worried that he was going to pull it off, and they did. And it's really good. But I think it's this. Some people might say Parenthood, actually, because it's the first type of movie that tried to do the stuff they did. It got spun off into the TV show, and I think it has some footing. There's some Bowfinger people out there, just for the record.
Sweet. I mean, interesting movie. Weird movie, though. I rewatched it last year. I really like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but that's not a solo Steve Martin as much. So
I think it's this.
Okay.
All right. Here's my big unanswerable question.
Okay.
Whew. Just hope you're sitting down. Well, you are.
Okay.
I can see you.
Yeah.
Are we sure Annie was a good daughter?
Oh, wow.
I'm going to make the case.
Okay.
Doesn't tell her parents that she's even met somebody for 3 months. She's just traipsing around Italy. Nobody hears from her. Meets this guy, immediately decides to get married to him. Comes back, drops this like atomic bomb on her family, and then gets mad how they react.
Okay.
Completely flips out over this stupid blender thing and forces her dad, who doesn't even want her to get her married, to kind of solve that. Mm-hmm. And then at the actual wedding, completely ignores her dad the whole time. Doesn't have the father-daughter dance with her. Doesn't make 10 minutes of time with her. Leaves without saying goodbye. And then at the end, it's like, oh, the phone rings. Oh, it's Annie. Oh, dad, I just wanted to say goodbye. If my daughter fucking gets married and just leaves and I don't get the hug in before the end of the wedding, and then I get like this, like, oh, I forgot to call my dad phone call. That's it. I'd be so mad. I would cancel the catering stuff. But you pay for this then. You didn't even say goodbye to me at my own wedding. Maybe I'm spiteful.
You make a good case. I think the phone call is a great movie moment. I tear up every single time. And it makes no sense logistically, as you pointed out. That's not when flights leave for Hawaii. It's not how weddings end. It is totally ungrateful for her to not find him at any point. Also, it's just not how weddings work. Like, he would be around. So I hear you. My defenses are, number one, again, great movie moment. And number two, she's 22 years old. She's really young. And I think all of the problems in this movie, which make for a great movie, but they can be traced to just she's 22 and she doesn't strategically have it figured out yet. The thing that you got to do, if I could give advice to your daughter or to any other daughters out in the world, you can't have the first guy you bring home be the one. You know what I'm saying? You got to let the dads get a little afraid and get this energy out. So by the time you bring the actual person you want to marry home, they're relieved. You know what I'm saying? And they're just like, let me tell you, and I know this from experience. So everything that she's doing, she's just a little young and she didn't totally plan it out. Is she a bad person or is she just inexperienced? I leave it to you.
Bad daughter.
Okay.
go find your father before you leave. I don't care if you missed the flight. Find your father, find your mother, have one last moment with them, and then go on your honeymoon.
I agree.
What the hell?
I mean,
and also,
I agree.
Like you said, it's a nice moment, and it is. It's a little choke up moment that she calls.
Nice.
But you know what else would have been nice? If she had the gets back out of the car and runs because she realizes she didn't say goodbye to her dad and runs across through all the cars and gives him the hug. I also would have enjoyed that. And it would make me think she actually cared about her dad.
Right. That's true. It's like sort of like a reverse The Graduate. But
or no. My best friend's wedding when he pops up at the end. Julia Roberts thinks he left. And then all of a sudden there's Dermot Mulroney with one last hug.
And I know this is hard for a dad to hear. And I get it. And I related to Steve Martin in this movie more than ever when I watched it recently. But it's also about her moving on and them coming to a new place and a new understanding. Wow. You know?
She could have hugged him.
She could have hugged him. And I hope that everyone listening or everyone related to you takes that lesson to heart.
Hug your parents. What piece of memorabilia would you want from this movie?
Is the house available?
The house is off the table.
Oh, come on. What about just because there are several houses, I just want the front of the house. You know, just that one.
How about the bedazzled wedding bride sneakers?
Those are really nice. I was going to ask, what do you think happens to Sidekick? Like, is it bought by another company or is George Banks on the street?
Oh, interesting. So is George Banks like, is he like Jeff Bezos right now?
Well, I mean, I don't think so because, you know, when Brian shows up, there's that great line of like, he's wearing Nikes. So
yeah.
George Banks is like an independent athletic shoemaker in the early 90s trying to go up against Nike. I'm guessing it doesn't work out totally well, but do they get acquired?
Yeah, maybe they get acquired. Maybe he's like, yeah, it's probably more likely he like merges with Foot Locker and it doesn't work out that well.
Okay, if I can't have the house, which I think I should be able to have the house or at least the kitchen, but fine. I would take the cappuccino maker. I love the cappuccino maker scene. It's really sweet. Yeah.
That's a good one. I would take the sneakers. My wife and daughter went nuts for the sneakers. I think they filed that away if my daughter ever gets
married. Do you know actually that I wore white sneakers when I got married? And I think
it's a great idea.
It's because of this movie. Like,
you're
standing
for 6 hours. Like, it's a great idea.
I didn't put it together till this moment, but I'm like, oh yeah, that must have been where I got the idea.
Who won the movie, Steve Martin?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it has to be Steve Martin. Yeah.
You could make a case for Nancy Myers because this is when it all comes together, but it comes together more for her later on.
I knew this as a Steve Martin movie for a while, and then eventually it became, oh, Nancy Myers wrote that movie?
Yeah.
But I never felt like the wind was in there.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for the rewatchables. Kyle Creighton produced this one. He's not married yet.
I look forward to that movie. Kyle, if you'd like to make a comedy about it, I would enjoy it.
Cousin-in-law of the Bride?
Yeah.
Could be about me.
Really, really fantastic. There's a lot of potential here.
Yeah. All right. Amanda, it was great to see you as always. Father of the Bride, 30th anniversary. You can find it on all the streaming places. And we'll see you next time when we watch this.